This is Talk is Cheap. I spoke with Executive Director of Healthcare for All Oregon, Mary Beth Healy, and Lane County Chair of Healthcare for All Oregon, Lou Siniger, about single-payer healthcare that we need in this state and legislation that's about to happen. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
HCAO.org is our website.
It stands for
Healthcare for All Oregon.
Right. So what, tell me about that. What, when did that start? Are you guys, you know, 30 years ago, they used to take us out in a van and we'd go around canvassing people's houses to get them to support single payer healthcare. Was that you guys? So, wasn't that you guys?
Well, that was the beginning. That was absolutely the beginning. So Healthcare for All Oregon has been in existence in one iteration or another since that 2001-2002 ballot measure signature collection drive for ballot measure 23, which did not pass. So thank you for your work on that, Curtis. But that, you know, since that time, Healthcare for All Oregon has been organizing and building and advocating and educating Oregonians about what a simplified publicly funded healthcare system would look like. And we've had some tremendous victories in the legislature, especially over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, which is just very exciting about where we are today in Oregon being the first country in the nation that is likely to pass a truly universal publicly funded healthcare system that all Oregonians can enjoy, where everyone is in and nobody is out.
Yeah.
Right. And so, well, go ahead.
Also, I'd like to add, Curtis, that it was last November, or a year ago this November, that the voters passed a constitutional change that gave everybody, that recognizes that healthcare is a human right. It was the first one of its kind in the whole country. So, you know, that's a meaningful step.
And so what does that entail? What can you explain, give us details on what that plan is? It goes up to the legislature in 2026, is that right?
Yeah, so I think maybe, you know, it's like, you know, we all know, like Lou mentioned, the ballot measure 111 in 2022. And that is just one more indication of Oregonians, you know, and Oregon as the state leading the nation in successfully advancing all types of health reform efforts, right, designed to cover more people and hold the healthcare industry accountable. But, you know, here we are still with an inefficient, expensive, and chaotic system. Right.
Yeah.
And if you just think about, you know, the cost to Oregonians as patients and as taxpayers, you know, there's been a 40% increase in healthcare costs over just the last 10 years. And that exponential rise, it's unsustainable, right? For families, individuals, as well as businesses and taxpayers. And what Measure 111 did was make a very strong statement that healthcare is a basic human right. Now, it didn't have any, you know, legislative components to describe what that would be, but what has happened since then are, you know, discussions about, okay, if healthcare is a human right, then we need to provide healthcare for everyone, right? Where everyone is in and no one is out. So, you know, in 2019, and Lou, tell me if I'm wrong, you know, we were very active and guided the passage of Senate Bill 770 in the state legislature. And that created the task force on universal health care. Cedric Hayden. I was talking about Cedric Hayden down there. He served on that panel. And then, of course, Senator Manning, thank you, Lou, is one of our biggest champions in the Senate. And so out of that work, the governance, that task force decided or declared that we would be able to do a single-payer system, which would be more cost-effective than the dollars we spend today for health services in a more efficient and humane manner. So then, you know, coming kind of off of that victory, then in 2019, the board then created, the legislature passed Senate Bill 1089 just this past, you know, year in 2023, and that created the Universal Health Plan Governance Board, and it's that group, Curtis, that is going to design, frankly, this new and simplified healthcare system. And actually, that board was just announced. The members of the board were just announced, which I'll pull up and find for you. So it's very exciting. And they'll hire the executive director, and they will get to work figuring out the financing, working with, you know, our large health entities here in the state, from, you know, the Public Employee Benefit Board to the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, to state and local governments, to tribal leaders and tribal health organizations, and these regional health equity operations that have been set up in the last couple of years, to figure out how the CCOs, right, how do all of these existing organizations fit into a simplified and universal healthcare plan. So it's a very exciting time in Oregon, exciting time for Healthcare for All Oregon, and folks can get more information at hcaa.org. But it's very exciting, but, you know, it will be some time, right, for that board to create the plan, for us to do public engagement and outreach and education on that plan. And they, meaning the Universal Health Plan Governance Board, they will provide like an initial report at the end of this year, and then their final report will go to the legislature in September of 2027, which seems like forever, right, in the future. But we all know that it'll go back in a snap of the finger, which is why we're excited to talk to you and talk to folks down in, you know, in Lane County and in the valley down there, because everyone needs to know about this and really start thinking about what do they want in this simplified healthcare system.
Could I add a little thing about Senator Manning? You know, he's a retired Army person, right? And he spent over 20 years. And, you know, when I first met him, you know, he told me, he says, well, the reason why I think we ought to do this is because my 20 plus years in the Army, all my medical needs were taken care of. And if we can take care of the Army and the Navy and the Marines that way, why can't we do it for everyone else?
All right. And so just a point about this board. So, if we were to get a single payer health plan in Oregon, this board would oversee that. And these are elected officials that if something went wrong or we didn't like something, we have some recourse, right? These are elected officials, or how are these people kept accountable?
That's a really, really good question. So this current board, this Universal Health Plan Governance Board, they're going to create the plan. But out of that, I mean, the system would be administered by a public entity that, you know, I don't know that it would have elected officials per se, but there would be opportunities for that accountability, because, again, we don't want to end up with a system that creates the same kind of chaos that we currently are existing in. And nobody, Curtis, would create, if we're building our healthcare system today, as opposed to the 1940s, nobody would build it the way it is today, right? It's inefficient, it's costly, and it doesn't provide the kind of care that people need when they need it at a cost they can afford.
Well, but there's no one, the shareholders in a private health organization, health maintenance organization, they go to the shareholders.
Well,
right.
They're the ones in charge, not, and they're not accountable to the patients. That's the difference, I mean.
Correct. Correct. When my premium goes up by 18%, I can gripe to my friends and family about it, you know, but there's nobody that I can go to say this is outrageous. Now, that, you know, that being said, there have been laws passed to try to rein in those costs, right? And to have that kind of accountability. But it doesn't seem like they've quite done the job that they were intended to do, because we're still seeing, as I indicated earlier, incredible increases in the cost and, quite frankly, the price of healthcare for consumers and patients.
I had a personal awakening on this. I'm a retired union representative, and the last 20 years of my service to the workers was spent with AFSCME. So I was representing employees working for the city of Eugene, and we had a labor management committee, which I was on because I was a rep, right? And so we got together every so often, and this one time, this is when I finally woke up to the problem. So the insurance person, you know, went over the money that was brought in and the money expended. And he says, you can see that we're really in a lot of trouble here, and we're going to have to take away some benefits or increase the cost. Now, this is a labor management committee working on it. And so I looked at the bottom line, and I says, well, wait a minute. It shows here that something like 17 or 18% here is left over. Why should we have to make any adjustments? And he said, well, that's to cover our administrative expenses. And in other words, not only the expenses of administrating the plan, but also the profits that they needed to make. And from that day on, I knew something was very wrong with our system.
So in public health care, there is no middleman, there is no profits being sucked out of all your money goes to health care. It doesn't go to the administrator or the shareholders. It all goes to you. So and so that is why let's dispel some myths here about socialized medicine. So that is why that it is cheaper. It just has to be cheaper for socialized medicine.
Absolutely. And yes. When they did the task force, now they were doing kind of rule of thumb, you know, generalizations, but they found that it was going to be cheaper, $1 billion cheaper almost. And every study that's been done, even by congressional budget office, has found that if we had a publicly provided system, it would be cheaper.
Equity too. There, poor people and rich people would receive the same care in a single payer program.
That's right. Yeah.
Everyone would get the same care. It wouldn't matter based on zip code or income or age or anything else. You know, it's like you go to the doctor and, you know, maybe there's a $5 copay or something. You know, again, the actual cost for consumers has not been determined, right? But here's what I can say. It has to be cheaper, right? We already today spend more money on our healthcare than any other country in the world, and we have worse outcomes. In 2021, the average spending per person in the country was about $13,000, right? And that's $5,000 more than any other high-income industrialized nation in the world. So if everybody else can do it, I think we can. And I remember thinking, you know, back in the day, I was like, you know, when South Africa is going to have a universal healthcare system before America. And sure enough, they do, right? Because it's much more efficient. It's much more humane. And that goes to the ballot measure, right? It is a human right, which means that everybody should be able to access the healthcare they need when they need it.
I would also like to add to that, Mary Beth, that you know, we suffered the COVID pandemic, right? And every country in the world dealt with it one way or the other. We didn't deal with it very well, but nonetheless, the people mostly affected or worst affected were Black and brown people.
Right.
And other places, and you know, in Europe and whatnot, were they were affected, but not based on color, not based on color. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, why is it that Black women giving birth have more traumatic effect, lose their child or die in the process than white women in the world, in the United States? So this is a form of discrimination that, if we had publicly funded healthcare, would go a long ways to ending that.
The only other thing I would just add to that is that even with health coverage, right, even when people have coverage, because Oregon has done a great job on covering people, right, but still 7% of Oregonians talk about difficulty paying for their copays, deductibles, pharmaceuticals, et cetera, and more than half of those are people of color, right? So no, we don't have an equitable healthcare system today.
And so it's another myth is that you don't have a choice. There is no network. There is no in or out of network. Everyone's in network. I can go to whatever doctor I want within reason.
That's right.
That's right. That's where the real choice takes place, is that you will be able to go to any doctor that you want. Whereas right now, you better be careful if you go to a doctor that's not in network.
The other thing is they don't delay care. If someone comes up with a new procedure or a new treatment or something, single payer socialized medicine is more likely to adopt that, whereas a for-profit insurance company is going to deny new technology until it's proven. Is that right?
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily why insurance companies deny things, right? And again, the plan hasn't been written for Oregon, right? That's kind of where we are right now, is that Oregon is writing this story about its publicly funded, simplified healthcare system. And so, you know, we don't know everything yet on what they're going to decide or what the legislature is going to decide. But what we do know is that the goals are pretty clear, right? That we want to make sure that every Oregonian can access the care they need when they need it, and that we are doing that in a cost-effective way. And a lot of those savings come from transparency in this industry, right? Which would be a great segue to pharmacy benefit managers as an example, right? Because there wouldn't be, I mean, pharmacy benefit managers in the same way that they are today, where there's a lot of hidden information about where the money goes. And that is the other element of this, going back to the fact that we spend way more money in this country on our healthcare system and our healthcare spending than any other industrialized nations in the world. And we have worse health outcomes. Americans are not the healthiest because we spend the most. And sometimes you may not need that latest, greatest thing, right? If somebody wants a knee replacement that's made of titanium as opposed to, you know, the tried and true, then, you know, maybe the insurance wants you to get the titanium because they can charge you more for that, right? I don't know that as a fact, but I'm just saying those kinds of decisions are made by the insurance company, not a provider. Right? That's the other piece. It's insurance companies, you know, and bean counters making the decision. And then we have this preponderance coming on of these private equity firms trying to buy our healthcare system and buy our our doctors' clinics. Again, putting more money people between me as the patient and my doctor or my nurse practitioner or my physician assistant, whoever my primary care provider is.
Yeah.
And that is wrong, because that's where the health outcomes piece comes in. If your doctor isn't making decisions about your care, then you're not going to get the best care that you can have.
A doctor, yeah, rather than an insurance company.
That's right.
Correct. A medical professional.
Yeah, I was just talking to a doctor the other day. What he said was, it's just not right. He has to leave his patient and talk to somebody, some administrator with a high school or college education, but not in medicine, about the treatment he wants to give that patient. A half hour out of that day's time. That is just ridiculous. And it goes on and on all the time. That's what's wrong with the system.
All right. So tell me about private equity. So I can buy stock in a health maintenance organization. Isn't that kind of... So how would I make money? The only way I'm going to make money on my stock investing in a health maintenance organization is if they provide the cheapest care possible for the least amount of money. That doesn't seem to work. Can you give me the details on private equity?
Why is healthcare being treated as a commodity? It's not a widget. It's not a washing machine. It's not General Electric, right? I just think that is, again, the backwards way that we look at our healthcare system in this country. You know, it should be that patients and providers are the people that should be making the decisions about medical care, not an insurance company or a private equity firm.
Can you give me an example of private equity in medical?
Well, we have a lot of acquisitions and mergers and closures going on. I would also like to add, Curtis, that it's not just those companies involved with the stock exchange. There are also companies like Peace Health and like Pacific Source that are nonprofit, but the system that they're in forces them to always come up with a profit. And that's how Peace Health got bigger. That's how Pacific Source got bigger, is that even though they don't have shares, they save their money to buy and acquire other insurance companies or other clinics and whatnot. So it's not all shareholders that are doing this. It's the system of selling healthcare for a profit. I was raised on a farm, so I kind of simple in a lot of ways. You know, insurance companies make a bet. I mean, this is the general thing. They make a bet that when you get fire insurance for your home, that you'll pay more money in before your home ever burns down. Plus, like any insurance company, they have use of your money then to invest it, right? But when it comes to healthcare, you and I know that everybody in our country and in the world is going to need healthcare. So that's a pretty bad bet. So they have to shave every nickel they can, because in the end, everybody needs healthcare. So what are they operating off of? The use of our money to make a profit.
Right, but I like that analogy that an insurance company is betting that you are not going to need insurance, and that's how they make their profit. Whereas socialized medicine, they're not looking at that. They're looking for how can we best serve the patient.
Exactly.
That's right.
So, which brings me to the other advantage of socialized medicine is now you're not dependent. You don't have to work. You're not dependent on your job for healthcare. Your healthcare isn't dependent on how much money you have.
What would happen if we could imagine if some budding entrepreneur, right, wanted to leave their job But they stay because they know that they need health care. But they wouldn't have to worry about that. There would be greater economic opportunity for folks because they wouldn't have to worry about that 12,000 plus financial burden on getting health care, right? They wouldn't have to be dependent on their employer to provide that coverage. It would be automatic. And so if I wanted to move from Bend to, you know, to Joseph, I could do that. And it wouldn't matter whether I had a job in Joseph right away that was going to provide health care, because I would always have my health care no matter what.
Right. And actually, businesses actually want this because it spreads their costs out, too. Then they don't have to manage someone's health care. Right. Businesses actually want this.
That's a good point, Curtis. You know, there's a, in the city of Eugene, as an employer, they have several employees just there to administer the health insurance company's, application to cover the employees, right? So it's like every company has a health care person just to manage and administer, from the employer's point of view, the health insurance company, right? So, I mean, it's so much waste. Why? They wouldn't need that, right, if we had publicly provided health care.
Right. So this is me. This is my analogy here. A lot of what I do on the show is I try to bring people, you know, conservatives over here to our side. And to me, the socialized medicine, whether you believe in capitalism or not, it's more of a co-op really than socialized medicine. We're just pooling all our money together to get better prices, the same way you would do with a co-op, with a farm co-op. You're just pooling all your money together to get better prices. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
That's a great analogy.
It's not a Marxist takeover of the United States, right?
No, it is a more efficient way of providing the healthcare services that Oregonians need. And this, you know, this issue around conservatives, it's really important because it doesn't matter if you're liberal or conservative or apolitical or what. Everybody needs healthcare. Everybody in our current system has a healthcare story about how inefficient, ineffective, and expensive their coverage is. And, you know, for myself, I cannot imagine that when this Universal Health Plan Governance Board is, you know, has completed its work, that what they're going to come up with is that Oregonians are going to have to spend, you know, are going to have a $12,000 health tax. No, because again, efficiencies, buying in bulk, right? That kind of co-op model, I love it. But taking that, you know, administrative element out of it, it's not like you don't need any administration, but that is a huge piece of what drives costs, right? The lack of transparency in prescription drugs is another thing that drives costs. Don't know if this is a current fact, but back in the day, the average premium, right, 20% of that premium cost was pharmaceuticals. That's a lot. And again, if you can get into the transparency, which is the pharmacy benefit manager aspect, and Representative Nathanson actually has a bill she's working on for this short session coming up to shine a light on the actions of pharmacy benefit managers, because they are the middle people between the insurance company and the drug company, right? So they may negotiate with Pfizer for $1 a pill, right? Then they negotiate with the insurance company for $3 a pill. This is all made up. These are not real numbers, just as an example. But as consumers and patients and taxpayers paying for this stuff, we have no knowledge of that. in the public sphere. There's right. such a lack of transparency in this industry. And again, I go back to my main point. This is our money.
Where does the pharmaceutical manager sit? Where is that? Who does he work for? Who do they work for?
The problem is that the way the system is working now, everybody's caught up in the different ages and groups and how much money you can afford to buy how much insurance and everything. The idea is, look, most of the time, most people are not sick and are not in need of health care. So if you put everybody in the same pool, that means that most of the time you're not spending out money, but those that are healthy are putting in money that helps those that need to be helped. It's just, you know, making the pool of 4.2 million people in Oregon, where most of them are healthy, and paying into a system where fewer of us need help. That's how I kind of look at it.
Well, and I was just going to say, you know, one example of that is the Oregon Prescription Drug Purchasing Pool, which is now called Array RX, because it's not just Oregon anymore. Washington and Nevada and Connecticut now have joined into Oregon's very unique program back in the day to negotiate with the drug companies, right? Because again, if it's 20% of a premium, and we all know people who have struggled to get their pharmaceuticals, that is a huge difference. I remember when that law was first passed, Curtis, and this is back now in 2003 legislative session, and it only allowed a certain number at that time of Oregonians to join, right? Again, that carving up of people that Lou was talking about. You had to be 54 years or older, at or below a specific federal poverty line, blah, 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 right? But you got the card for free, and you could go to participating pharmacies, of which most in the state were participating. And this one couple I know, the husband had throat cancer, and his medicine, his liquid morphine, was like $400 a month, which is probably so cheap compared to what it would be today, right? But $400 a month. And they, you know, the wife was at the pharmacy. She calls me up. She's like, Mary Beth, I don't know what I'm going to do. We have to pay our rent this month or this week. Mike needs his medicine. I'm at the pharmacy and I don't even want to go to pick it up because I'm not going to be able to pay it, right? And she's in tears, Curtis. I was like, Kathy, did you show them your Oregon prescription drug card? She's like, no. I was like, well, go in, talk to the pharmacist, show him your card, call me back, right? So that $400 prescription, she calls me back. She's like, she's crying. Now she's crying. I'm like, oh my God, Kathy, what's the matter? She's like, oh my God, Mary Beth, the pharmacist told me it would be $40. $40. 90% cheaper, right? If I did that math right, because math is not my strong suit. But that's an amazing, life-changing for a family, right? And no family should be making those decisions between paying their rent or getting the medicine they need to stay alive. This is not the way a system should be managed for healthcare. You know, again, we're not widgets, we're people, and we deserve care when we need it at a price we can afford.
So I'm not familiar with the pharmaceutical manager. What can you tell me a little more about that, about where he sits, who he works for, the pharmaceutical company then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, again, you know, when we go to transparency in the healthcare industry, it's not great, but they are very much a behind the scenes operation, and they are companies that manage the prescription drug benefit on behalf of health insurers. Some also are Part D drug plans, large employers, and other payers, and they purportedly negotiate with the drug manufacturers and pharmacies to control that that drug spending that we were talking about earlier. But again, there's no transparency because they operate in the middle of that distribution change for prescription drugs. So they, you know, they do the development and the maintenance of the list or the formularies that many of us are familiar with of the covered medications that your insurance company will pay for, right? They purportedly use that negotiating power to negotiate rebates and discounts from the drug companies. But where do those rebates and discounts go? Do they go to we, the patients? Because again, remember, it's our money they're negotiating with. So they are just another middle person in our healthcare system between us and our provider.
That ultimately increases costs eventually and profits for the insurance company.
You know, there's some evidence that shows they have been able to, quote unquote, lower drug prices and slow the growth of spending. But we don't really know because, again, you know, using my analogy earlier, you know, if they negotiate, you know, with Pfizer for $1 a pill, but then they're negotiating in air quotes with, you know, with Regents or Pacific Source or name the insurance company, you know, Pacific Source doesn't know that they negotiated $1 from Pfizer, right? So they may feel like, oh, okay, well, good. I mean, I feel good getting $3 a pill, right? Or again, that's not how they do it. But, there's no transparency because we don't know exactly what the PBMs are negotiating.
Just look at this. I mean, Canada pays much less for its drugs. Now, Canada's healthcare system does not cover drugs, but Canada as a nation negotiates the price that those pharmaceuticals will charge. And so everybody wants to go to Canada and get their drugs because they're like 40, 50 or more percent cheaper.
A large group has more power to negotiate.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the Costco mentality, right? More people in the pool gives you more power to negotiate better prices.
That's right.
Okay, so let me just tell you my little story here that I used to work at a medical office, and my mother was the bookkeeper for this medical office. And my mother was very conservative, okay? She defended Nixon till the day she died, okay? But she was the bookkeeper, and what she told me was, she goes, you know, I got to say, Medicare pays us, we have to fill out a lot of forms, and you're filling out forms to make sure your money is spent properly, is why you're filling it. She's filling out a lot of forms, but Medicare pays us, the HMOs won't pay us. And so the doctors in this doctor's office, this was Valley Internal Medicine, and a nephrologist in the San Fernando Valley, they kicked out the HMOs and only would take Medicare and private insurance. Now, where I'm going with this is in a single payer system, there will be no private insurance. And their argument is you need private insurance to develop new treatments, and we need this money, this big money, to develop these treatments. And that's really not true. There is no, doctors and scientists aren't developing things for profits, right? They might be developing them for prestige, but most of the pharmaceutical drugs have been developed under public
by the
money.
NIH. See, everybody has a healthcare story. So if any of the folks listening have a story that they want to share, maybe they were part of this, you know, Oregon Medical Group, the OMG Optum, acquisition a couple of years ago down in Eugene. Share your story at our website, healthcareforall.org, HCAO.org, because it is those stories that are another component of bringing people together, right? We are not alone in this battle because people feel pretty strongly, again, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Conservative, Liberal, Green, whatever, everyone knows that the healthcare system is not working. Where we don't know, right, is where do we go from here? And at HCAO, we know where we're going from here. We're going to build an equitable, universal healthcare system that is publicly funded and publicly accountable, where every Oregonian is in and no Oregonian is out. Would almost guarantee, although I'm you know, I'm not in charge, right? I can't just wave my magic wand, that those costs will be exponentially lower for us as consumers and patients. And you know, you talk about your mom's experience, right? Like, I think providers and doctors would be so relieved not to have to deal with 87 different insurance companies who all have a different form and different, you know, it's a nightmare for them. So they have to hire a lot of people to deal with all of that work. Now, I'm not against job creation because that's a good thing, but I'm just saying those individuals could probably do another good job, whether within a new and improved and simplified healthcare system or without, because it's not like you're not going to need any people. It's not like there aren't going to be, you know, staff and people to do work. You won't have to have 20 people in your medical office just to deal with the paperwork. It's right. A nightmare.
Well, and another thing, just as one more thing, is the almost every day the pharmaceutical companies would buy us lunch, the whole office lunch, just to get 5 minutes with the doctor to sell them on the latest drugs and whatever off-label thing that the drugs were doing.
Yeah, I just wanted to support your mother's story with what is going on right now. And that is, as you know, United Healthcare bought out Oregon Medical Group and is now trying to buy out the Corvallis Group. However, I want you to pay attention to this, that St. Charles, which is over in Bend, and the Samaritan Hospital, which is in Corvallis, gave notice to United Healthcare that they would no longer accept their insurance anymore. Why? Because they were telling their doctors and the hospital how to treat the patients, which was causing a nightmare in the organization. Plus, they were not paying on time, exactly what your mother said. And so, you know, I find it quite, it's just absolutely ridiculous that here we are, Samaritan Hospital in Corvallis didn't want United Healthcare, and yet it's United Healthcare now that is going to try to buy out all the clinics in Corvallis.
And that is something that, you know, whether you live in the, you know, in the area that the Corvallis Clinic covers, you know, it happened in Eugene a couple of years ago. It's happening in Corvallis now. And we actually have the opportunity to stop this corporate takeover of health services in Corvallis. And folks can reach out. Again, they can get all the information they need at hcao.org. But United Health has become a pretty bad actor in the last few years. I mean, they currently are the largest, you were talking about this private equity thing, and while United is not that, you know, they are now the largest employer of physicians in the country, right? With over 100,000 physicians, because they're buying up these clinics around the country. And, you know, they do kind of focus their model patients, you know, as a revenue source and not as patients who need healthcare. And, you know, they have been in a little bit of trouble. I think they've got a federal lawsuit going on around some decisions that were made by artificial intelligence as opposed to a physician. So there's a lot of problems with United Healthcare taking over our healthcare services in the Mid Valley. And I would encourage everyone to go to the Healthcare for All website, hcao.org, and get some more information. We have a petition up that we want to present to the Oregon Health Authority that can deny this request to acquire these clinics. And, you know, it coming to a neighborhood near you, right, an insurance company or a private equity firm buying up your doctor.
Or closing your hospital.
Right.
Well, you know, it's again, medical decisions being based on the profitability or non-profitability of the company. And that's exactly what Peace Health did for the University District Hospital. They said, gee, we're losing $2 million a month, so we're going to close it. Of course they were losing money because a lot of the homeless go there to that hospital and don't pay a dime, right? So of course they were losing money. But we need a hospital. Now we're a second largest city in the state of Oregon, and we don't have a hospital. Can you imagine?
All right. So speaking of that, this is my own research of this is in other states, the hospital association, which by the way, you know, people are against unions. These are unions for corporations. Is the hospital association is a union for a hospital corporation. And yeah. Supposedly they wrote in other states, the hospital associations writes the shutdown procedure. And what they did in this case, in Eugene's case, is they just had a provision for your insurance records. Thank you very much. You know, and they took care of the insurance company and us for our insurance records, which is great. But no provision for like even a 6 month period of what you're going to do without a hospital, or no provision mm-hmm. for shutting down the hospital. And my own. I used to design fire alarm systems briefly. I'm not an expert on that, but on the board of these, when you do a fire alarm system, there's public officials and there's an insurance company, and the manufacturers sit on the board and write the code for these things. So shouldn't there have been a public official deciding the hospital shutdown procedure when they opened the hospital, or 8 years ago when they redid the hospital?
Yes, there should have been. You know, if we had a publicly provided system, that wouldn't have happened. It would have been analyzed and money redirected, right? So, but what they did, I mean, even Governor Kotek asked them, wrote Peace Health, would you delay your decision for 8 months so that we can talk to everybody involved and come up with a plan? They didn't. Their response was, if you hold us up on this, we're going to close it sooner. Now, is that the Sacred Heart that I was raised with? I don't think so.
No, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, we are at a very, very, very exciting time in Oregon. And while, you know, the Universal Health Plan Governance Board has just been announced, right? They will start their work, I'm sure, after they're confirmed by the Senate next month. But we as Oregonians, we have the opportunity to make our voice heard on these mergers and acquisitions that are happening by, you know, going to the HCAO website at hcao.org, find all the information there on how to make your voice heard in the immediate with some of these crises that we're going through right now. And then also as we build to for that bigger system, we are, you know, we're on a strong drive to educate Oregonians. So if you've got a group or a belong to a church or a chamber or a union or a civic group, invite us to come and speak. We want to educate folks. We want to answer questions to the best of our ability, but we want to people to understand that this is coming and that they have an opportunity to shape what our new, improved, and simplified healthcare system looks like. So it's a great opportunity. Go to hcao.org for more info. Sorry, Curtis, but I just really think it's great because we've got, you know, there's already been a delay in the Care Oregon scan merger up in Portland, and they have, you know, they take care of 500,000 lives in this state, you know, in from Portland to the coast and down to, you know, even, you know, to Yamhill County. So there's still an opportunity for folks to have their voice there on that merger with a California company that could get, you know, $1 billion of Oregonians' tax money, right? No, that's our money. It's going to stay here for care here, not going to California for crying out loud. And then, of course, this Optum thing. And then we have the legislative session. The short session starts on February 5th, goes through March 12th. There's a lot happening there. Again, you know, the Eugene delegation, I know, is, or the Lane County delegation, is working on some stopgap measures for this intermediate around this hospital district closing. There's PBM legislation. There's this corporate practice of medicine law, Curtis, which is going to attempt to kind of stymie, I guess, the health equity folks from purchasing, making sure that, you know, healthcare facilities or doctor's offices, that they're owned by a provider, that providers are making these decisions, and again, not bean counters. You know, there's a workforce bills, there's a lot happening in the healthcare sphere. So if you're concerned about the dysfunctional system and you want to help improve it, please join us in our battle to create a universal publicly funded system in Oregon.
Hey, Mary Beth.
Hey, Lou.
Curtis, could I put in a little word for a local?
Please do.
So, oh, yeah.
Also, you know, we have a meeting first Tuesday of every month at the First United Methodist Church at 7 o'clock in the evening. You can join us in person or Zoom in. And what we're interested in is creating house parties, showing movies and documentaries, right? And we're creating resolutions to place before Lane County and also the city of Eugene to support this movement and support universal care. And not only that, but several of the unions in the area, AFSCME unions and SEIU unions, all support this endeavor. And so if you're involved in a union, bring it up. Bring up universal care. Bring up healthcare for all Oregon. And we'll present where we're at, and we also have speakers available for any group, any church, any faith organization. We'll be there. So anyway, first Tuesday of every month, 7 o'clock, First United Methodist Church. Thank you.
All right, Lou Siniger, Lane Chapter Chair of HealthcareForAll.org, and Mary Beth Healy, Executive Director of HealthcareForAll.org. I just have a question about what's up with the funding, though. And to me, I'd say just one less B-1 bomber, a couple of less B-1 bombers is what I say. But how is that funded?
Well, again, you know, we you know, average family premiums in this state are $20,000 a year, Curtis, right? On average, an Oregon employee or worker pays about 30%. Towards that premium. So what is that? You know, $6,000 a year right there, plus copays, deductibles, and other out-of-pocket costs. So we're already paying for it. That's what I would say. We already spend the money. We just don't spend it in the most efficient manner, and we don't spend it where it needs to be spent, which is actually giving patients the care that they need and providers, quite frankly, a system that they can operate in, right? Lot simpler. A simplified, publicly funded system that covers everyone is Oregon's goal, and we are on the pathway there, and we are further down the road than almost any other state in the nation. So just like we have done for decades, from the bottle bill to public beaches to the Oregon Health Plan, right? Oregon has led the way on so many important policy issues, and we can be the first. We're the first to place it as a human right in our Constitution, and we can be the first to pass a publicly funded healthcare system where everybody is in and nobody is out. Please go to hcao.org to learn more.
And can I add that if you'd like to donate, we have individual membership for $30 a year. You can put that in. Also, for organizations, we ask them to donate at least $100 a year to further our cause. And you can all find it on our website. Thank you.
All right, Mary Beth Healy and Lou Siniger of HealthcareForAll.org, thank you very much for your time and all your great work.
Thank you. Curtis, it was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.